This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. There they were, neatly stacked on the day they dropped, on a wire rack inside the door of my local record store. They had names like In Pittsburgh Weekly, or The Boston Phoenix, or The New Haven Advocate. They were filled with snarky cartoons, classifieds, music reviews, and listings for all the clubs in town. They featured sex advice columns, and for those who didn't find what they wanted there, ads for all kinds of sex services in the back. They were edgy, with so many stories about alternative culture that you might think that legal pot was the biggest issue in America today. But they also dug deep. They took a stand on issues, and they went where the safer dailies didn't dare go. In a loving obit upon the death of the New Haven Advocate, former staffer Paul Bass wrote this. It broke stories on city hall corruption, slumlords, real estate scams, political campaigns, police brutality, emerging trends in music and theater and food. People sometimes lost their jobs or landed in federal court as a result of stories. Other times, the paper itself ended up with egg on its face for overreaching. Loved or despised, it was for decades an integral part of New Haven's civic conversation. But like those neat stacks of papers that began to look more disheveled and picked over as the week went on, the alt-weekly ideal I grew up with has become pretty run down. Those indie record and bookstores that provided both revenues and a place to pick up the papers, they vanished. Craigslist took the classifieds, the internet made the band listings kind of obsolete, and corporate ownership took the soul of the reporting. Some say we shouldn't be writing the alt-weekly obit just yet, though. Some say the soul's still there. Now it's just online, like in Bass's New Haven Independent. Today, we're checking in to see how alt-weeklies are faring in the competitive media market. Later, we'll talk about some of the new business models and strategies these publications are adapting to remain economically viable. And we want to hear from you. What do you miss about the old Advocate or the old Boston Phoenix? Is there another alternative newspaper that you turn to? Call us at 860-275-7266. 860-275-7266. You can email us where we live at WNPR.org. You can always tweet us at where we live. You can find our show online at WNPR.org. I want to welcome in from Washington, D.C., Tiffany Shackelford, who's executive director of the Association of Alternative News Media. Tiffany, welcome to Where We Live. We also want to welcome in Paul Bass, who's the editor of the New Haven Independent and a longtime New Haven Advocate editor and reporter. Paul, welcome back to the program. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, John. It's always a pleasure.
We're going to get back to Tiffany Shackelford in just a moment as we reestablish her line to D.C. But, Paul, I read this obit that you wrote for The Advocate. Clearly, you have a great love for the Alternative Weekly. First of all, before we get into what The Advocate was, what do you think the ideal is? I mean, am I making it too romanticized in my introduction there?
I don't think you are, John. It was really an exciting place to be. I mean, I grew up reading The Village Voice in New York. When I came to New Haven, I fell in love with The Advocate. And it's not that the alt-weekly was better than the mainstream press. It's that it was different from the mainstream press. And it spoke to an emerging set of values and ideas that emerged in the 60s and 1970s and that grew and were developed until these papers became obsolete. And there was nothing more fun and more meaningful than to work in one of those newsrooms in the heyday.
Tiffany Shackelford, I think I have you back now. What does the alt-weekly mean to you? I gave this kind of glowing introduction, and obviously Paul has a great affection for it. What exactly is the alt-weekly in your mind?
Well, good morning. We still are doing the things that I think, you know, everyone knows us for, speaking truth to power, telling stories that no one else will tell, and an absolute commitment to local and an absolute commitment to arts and culture. And I could talk about it more in a minute, but, you know, we have a lot of really healthy alternative news media organizations that are absolutely still doing that in a really powerful way. And in this day and age when news media, you know, particularly investigative reporting, seems to be dropping quickly, you know, we're still doing it. We're still digging.
So you think that it's too early to write the obit for these weekly magazines, even though we've seen so many cutbacks, we've seen so many of them change, and we've seen so many of them go away, Tiffany?
Absolutely. I think, you know, I think it's short-sighted to call for the death of them. I think you're not looking at the health of the entire industry, particularly in smaller to medium markets. And, you know, I've got papers that are absolutely increasing circulation, increasing readership, and actively getting a new generation of readers, which I think is very important. I don't think, you know, if you're going to call the, you know, the death of the Alt Weekly, then you might as well say the whole media is dead and we're all here today. So
yes, here we are talking about the media on the radio. And Paul, I think that's something that you and I have talked about an awful lot. The symptoms that we've talked about around alternative weeklies, do you believe, Paul, that they're really just the same as the overall newspaper industry has seen? Or do you think that there's something really substantially different there?
There is something different, and there was a split in the industry. I agree with Tiffany that if you go to a place like Burlington, Vermont, you see an alt-weekly 7 days that's fatter with more investigative reporting than you ever saw. But in all the major markets, they're either dead or petered out. In Connecticut, before the New Haven Advocates had their and the other advocates had their mercy killing by the corporation that owed them, Tribune, they hadn't done investigative journalism for years. You didn't even know there was a mayor's race in the cities they were in. I agree with Tiffany. I think what happens is that in the new media market, different models work depending on what city you're in and what the needs are. So there are smaller cities where it's working, but smaller cities around here, it's not. The Village Voice was bought by a chain that it's nothing now. You look at that thing, you almost want to cry to see how little is in it and what it is. And the corporations that bought these papers for the ad revenue and thought they could just squeeze them and get a few extra years out of the name, they really destroyed something meaningful. But there's more of it than ever before. Some of it are in the terrific weeklies Tiffany mentions, but the word weekly is not so important. The world changes. So if you really look at the spirit of what was going on at the alt-weeklies and the kind of people who work there, you find in other cities and in places like New England, you largely find them on the internet. And, you know, the nonprofit model now that has replaced the sort of sex advertising, restaurant advertising model that kept the alt-weeklies going through the latter part of the 20th century.
If you want to join our conversation as we talk about alternative weeklies with the New Haven Advocate going away, so many other newspapers changing over time, we'd like to hear from you, 860-275-7266. We're going to hear from William, who's calling from Stonington. William, go ahead. You're on Where We Live. Hi, William. You're on Where We Live. Go ahead. We'll cut back to William in just a minute. Do you think, Tiffany, that there may be a little bit too much nostalgia in our minds, specifically for two publications? The Village Voice that, as Paul said, was really the source for so many people. It was the original alt-weekly in many people's minds. And then also the Boston Phoenix, which stopped publication after nearly 50 years. Both of those have changed so much over time before the Phoenix went away. I mean, do you think that we have a little bit too much nostalgia for those two particular publications?
Well, in a short answer, yes. I think, you know, and just a couple things. First of all, we, you know, my association is now called Association of Alternative News Media. So we're very conscious and very much looking to new media models as our future. Someone here at NPR once said, you know, Alt Weeklies invented the internet because of the tone, that sort of in-your-face, bombastic tone that you find on so many successful internet sites is absolutely one that you know came out of the alt weekly tradition, and we are continuing that, you know, very much in social media, very much online. So it is a different model, and I think just in general we run into dangerous territory when we are too busy being nostalgic about, you know, about the days of past, and we're not looking forward, you know, to what the next monetization opportunities are, how we can speak for our community and you know, with our communities in a meaningful way.
But, you know, and Tiffany, that thing about in your face and bombastic, I would argue that that's become the mainstream. And then in addition to looking for monetization models, what the alt weeklies had been about was looking for news and spiritual and cultural models and ways of speaking. And what I came to feel, Tiffany, after a bunch of decades in the alt weeklies, that with the internet and with this in-your-face bombastic style that was appropriated from the underground, what was lost was the substance and the real challenge to power and thinking. What I see is the new model, the new alt media, really takes all that on and actually goes to a zoning board. The zoning board became the symbol in my mind about 10 years ago when I was leaving the Advocate. I was thinking, all weeklies don't go to zoning boards, and neither did the mainstream dailies anymore. They weren't going to Board of Education meetings. They weren't spending time in neighborhoods on stories that wouldn't necessarily lead to a snarky conclusion. And I think the Revolutionary Journalistic Act became going to a zoning board, then building from there the stories that connect you to a community and challenge established ways of thinking and the movement of capital and the and power. So I guess to me, I feel the spirit of the alt weeklies wasn't in, you know, yes, there are new monetization models, and I think the more interesting ones tend to be not for profit, but we could talk about that some other time. But I think the mission is different from the bombastic and in your face.
You know, Paul, I would respectfully disagree with that. I mean, I think we saw, you know, Dig Boston did a great job of covering, you know, the recent city elections. Chris Ferrone is really digging into local politics in a really smart way. We're seeing it, you know, in other papers across the country. You know, the Miami paper was the one that broke the A-Rod story. I think, you know, you are seeing sort of, and the way that they did that was, you know, knowing their neighborhoods and talking to their community. I think you are seeing it, actually, if you, again, take a look at the nation as a whole.
I agree with you, Tavi. I think those are the ones that worked. I think those are the ones that survived. What happened is, I think, when corporations bought a lot of these papers, the ones that came from the mainstream and said, we got to do what these guys are doing to make the money, they just took the outward appearance as the symbolism of what the challenge had been in an earlier generation, which is now on every sitcom on TV, which is on every kind of putrid discussion thread on the internet, where people just call, if they don't really have a good argument, you call them an A blank blank H-O-L-E, or it became something I didn't want my own kids to hear when I was growing up. And also what started as a sexual revolution, and what's part of what was represented in personal ads and free from strict rigid notions of what's okay, became another kind of sewer, and we saw in Connecticut where it became just a child slavery outlet for pimps. And that's why I think it's and I agree with Tiffany when she says, don't change it from news weeklies to news media. I think we also have to be looking at what's the soul of the journalism, not what's the monetization.
Well, and we're going to get to the monetization in a little bit, but let's just continue on this thread about the soul of the journalism as we talk with Paul Bass from the New Haven Independent, a longtime New Haven Advocate staffer, and Tiffany Shackelford, who's executive director of the Association of Alternative News Media. It sounds to me from what you're saying, Paul, is though that soul really needed to be rebooted in a certain way. The type of reporting that you were doing at The Advocate that was so very important for all those years still didn't include many of the things that you're able to do now with The Independent on kind of a daily beat. Do you think that in many ways the online media that you are part of today is filling a void that neither the mainstream media nor the traditional alt-weeklies ever really did with, you know, their long-form exposés once again on pot culture as opposed to zoning boards?
I agree with that, John. I said it's because what the mainstream is changes. Mainstream daily newspapers in New Haven, we used to have two of them. Now we have half the newsroom of one, used to go to all the local news and cover it. What the alt-weeklies did is they'd look at the day-to-day data and see what it meant and try to dig deeper with community connections. I feel like the new media, the new hyper-local online media, and it's not the only model. I happen to agree with Tiffany, some of the best journalism, again, I keep bringing up Burlington because I think that's one of the big successes, can be done in that old format. But yes, that's what the soul of journalism is. And I think what the meaning of alternative changed as the meaning of mainstream changed.
Well, and Tiffany, just expand on that a little bit more. The things that alt-weeklies, from a news standpoint, that survive in the more traditional way that we've talked about, that you can still pick up at the local record store, that you can leaf through, that you can leave on the bus, but you can also find now online. What's the journalism difference from you know, today to back in the day when Paul was working at The Advocate or the heyday of the Village Voice?
While I'd say that, you know, the specific examples that, you know, Paul is bringing up and in Connecticut, you know, that's possible. That's true. The thing is that I'm still seeing, you know, again, across the country in places like Boise, Idaho, you know, our paper there, the Boise Weekly, is actually breaking, you know, almost daily. They're breaking things the Daily isn't, you know, their Burlington, Vermont is a great example. 7 days, you know, is doing things that they aren't. And so that soul of journalism is still absolutely there. I mean, I would also point out, before I worked with the alternative press, I actually ran the Association of Capitol Reporters and Editors for all the State House reporters. And, you know, the State House reporters, they are shrinking every year, and there's not coverage on the State House level either. I mean, essentially what we're talking about here is a larger problem that cities and states and localities are just not getting the coverage from mainstream media, from alternative media, from anything, you know, and that is just a larger problem with the media industry as a whole, that, you know, that the watchdogging, you know, unfortunately has gone away, I think, nationally. But, you know, particularly, again, in, you know, in a lot of our markets in Houston, in Nashville, where Southcom is, they really are, you know, dedicated to the deep dives on local politics. Nope. So I think, you know, we are seeing it some ways. I wish, obviously, there was more. It's something I feel incredibly passionate about. It. I mean, we all got involved in this for small d democracy, right? To really, you know, watchdog the politicians. You know, that's kind of, I think, still at the heart of a lot of the alt-weekly newsrooms, because, you know, they're not there because of the, you know, the amazing paychecks or anything like that.
And quickly before our break, though, Paul, talk about watchdogging journalism is very important, and there's not enough of it. But another thing that you celebrate from the old Advocate and also into your new Independent is, if it comes with a little bit of an edge in the way you tell the story, with a voice and a point of view to a certain extent, it is going to be different and potentially more effective at uncovering things than the traditional media model will be. I think it's not just about the substance, but it's also kind of about the style of reporting that we're losing.
Totally. Connecting with your readers and admitting you're a human being rather than a computer, with a fake notion of objectivity based on a set of assumptions the mainstream media has always had, that capitalism is good, American foreign policy is always right, and now what I think they got from the alternative culture is that sort of nihilism is the best way to live your life. But John, I think voice is the key word there. What became less important in the modern age is opinion, trying to convince someone to win an argument because there's so much opinion on the internet. But what we brought from the alternative weeklies, and I agree with Tiffany, we're still strong a lot of places, is that you are telling a story. You have to care about what you're writing about and let the reader see that, and that you have to look for narrative and character. Yes, I think that's a hallmark of what we try to do, combining that with the shoe leather reporting and getting information analysis. You're a human being who thinks and feels, and that doesn't mean that you're the important part of the story. It doesn't mean that you have a point of view you need to convince people of, but it means you need to tell a story the way a human being tells a story. And whether it's in an alt weekly or an online site, people who read connect to that, and that's when journalism can become the beginning of democracy.
We're talking with Paul Bass, who's the editor of the New Haven Independent, a longtime staffer at the New Haven Advocate. Also with Tiffany Shackelford, the executive director of the Association of Alternative News Media. When we come back, we'll be talking with the CEO and founder of Southcom about some of the business models that alternative newspapers are trying and succeeding with, both on line and also in print. We want you to join the conversation. We'll get to some of your calls now. 860-275-7266. 860-275-7266. What does alternative news media mean to you? That's next Where We Live. This is Where We Live.
How important is it to have a regular source of local art and culture?
I think it's actually very important to have sources of local art and culture, especially for professional folks like myself who need a relief from work.
It really affects people's lives. It's actually one of the most important things to me, is being a part of art and culture.
We go to various art events in town and in Hartford, and so that's one way I get information.
I think it's important to know what's going on in your community, to find local events.
It's good to know what's going on around you.
Those are some voices gathered in Hartford by Anna Novak and Katie Pikus. We're talking today about where we get our arts and culture news and some of the other news about our world. In the past, a lot of it has come from so-called alt-weeklies like the New Haven Advocate, which folded a little over a month ago following 38 years of circulation. Many claiming that alt-weeklies are dead or near death. We want to see how these publications are really faring. We're talking with Tiffany Shackelford, executive director of the Association of Alternative News Media. She says they are alive and well. Paul Bass, the editor of the New Haven Independent, who again was with the Advocate for many, many years, says that things have indeed changed. Maybe there's just a new model out there. We want to bring you into the conversation in a moment, 860-275-7266. But I want to introduce Chris Farrell, who's CEO and founder of Southcom, Inc., also the former publisher of Nashville Scene, an alt-weekly based in Nashville, Tennessee. Chris, welcome to our program. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
One of the things we've been talking about a lot is the journalism of the alternative weekly newspaper and how that's maybe changed over time, how that's maybe moved to a different place. Let's talk a little bit about the business model. How are you making it work right now? I mean, what are the ways in which we can actually have a successful business model for this type of news that we all crave?
Sure. I mean, to begin with, I mean, I would take issue a little bit with Paul's characterization of companies that are, you know, acquiring these papers. You know, Southcom, we have 8 papers. We're the second largest group of alt weeklies in the country. You know, 4 of the papers we acquired were the Creative Loafing papers that we acquired after their bankruptcy. And 3 of the others were losing a significant amount of money when we got them. You know, the only one that was in decent shape when I got it was the Nashville Scene. And that's, you know, my hometown paper and the one that I had been the publisher of before I left to start Southcom. But, you know, we acquired these papers because I think they're important to their communities and because I think there is a business model there that can be successful. But it's not the same model that, you know, we were thriving under, you know, 6, 8, 10 years ago. You know, classified advertising is gone. That, for some of these papers, that used to make up a third of their revenue. But people aren't advertising less in markets. And so, you know, what we set out to do was figure out, you know, how do we leverage the brand that we have, the audiences we have, and the relationships with local businesses that we have to create a new business model. And frankly, the print advertising side, the display advertising, is holding up pretty well. And the new business models we're finding are things like when we generate our fastest growing revenue streams are putting on local events that match with our brand. So, you know, food events, music events, art events, things like that, that our readers want to come to and that where our advertisers want to engage face to face. And the readers and not just through the pages of the paper.
And these advertisers are who? I mean, who's spending money advertising in print in your pages?
It continues to be the local clubs and restaurants are a core category. The arts groups, one of the things that I say to our editors is that they have to be the definitive place to go for news about local arts and culture. And so, you know, instead of just covering the alternative rock bands that are coming through town, you know, we also cover the symphony and the ballet and the theater. And, you know, and in turn, those organizations advertise with us because we have those arts readers. And one of my observations about alt weeklies is that those of us who started reading them when we were in our 20s are still reading them. We're just no longer in our 20s. And, you know, we still have interest in culture, but it's not necessarily the same bands that we followed 20 years ago. And so, you know, we are writing for that audience as they're trying to make their decisions about spending their entertainment dollars in the city.
Well, I want to go to Tiffany Shackelford with this. And we've talked a lot about the journalism in the front of the magazine. A big reason why so many of us in our 20s and 30s and 40s now pick up the alternative weekly is we want to see those band listings in the back. The idea that that is part of what drives this business model, but it's also a reason for people to engage with these newspapers. How do you think, Tiffany, that whole world is faring, whether or not it's club owners buying big ads to say what's coming up or just listings that are gathered by the journalists there? It seems like that's still got to be a big part of what alternative weeklies are doing.
And I'm sorry, you cut out for the first part of your question, so I missed part of it. But arts and culture absolutely remains a core part of what we do. And you know, Southcom is definitely doing amazing arts and culture coverage across their papers. But our, you know, as well as our independents, and we all sort of look at the arts and culture holistically across, you know, all kinds. And I'm sorry if I didn't answer the question because I didn't hear the intro.
John, what I would say to that is, you know, the internet is a better platform for having comprehensive listings, right? But what we do in print is tell people which ones are good, right? I mean, what the value of our writers to, you know, go out and curate, you know, all of these events and say, you know, these are the ones you might want to really take a look at. That's what we can do in print. And then if somebody wants to come see everything that's playing, then, you know, come to our website. And if a club owner wants to show everything that they're doing, buy an ad.
You know, I sat with the club owner in here, who's the biggest club owner in Connecticut, Brian Phelps at Toad's Place, because we are developing our own business model for arts covers, John. We've been doing it for about a year, and I think it is succeeding. We're going to be filling in the gap. But when I went to the guy at Toad's, I said, would it make any sense for you to spend money with me in any way? He said, it doesn't make any sense for me to spend any money in the Advocate or any Art Weekly anymore or print. And let me tell you why. It's not only because most people, and this will get even greater, will be looking for not just listings, but their favorite writers' opinions on their phone, but because of the economics. So Brian sat on his computer and says, look what I can do now. I got these two bands coming tonight. I can go on Facebook for under $100, and I'm even overpaying to guarantee I get the top slot. And I can narrow cast my ad to every single person who likes this band or likes four bands just like it. And I can further narrow cast it to the five major campuses where 90% of my customers are coming from. And on top of that, I have my own email list I've gathered from everyone who buys with a credit card, buys their tickets. And I can instantly send, I can send 5, 10, 15,000 emails to people about a show I know they like. Now that's under $100. I could do it in 5 minutes. With the Advocate, he says, it's all people our age. No one who comes to most of these shows is here anymore. I wonder if in bigger cities, I love it that Southcom is succeeding. I love that in some places, these papers are still viable. I'm wondering, A, whether that audience that's still going to get their information that way is declining, and B, whether there's still a more interesting creative models on the internet that not only will work more as business models, but we'll find more interesting ways to do the arts, which I think if we do another show on this, John, I could tell you some of the experiments we're doing down here.
If I could just pop in, you know, a lot of our papers are looking very closely at mobile for their continued arts and culture coverage. Papers like the one in Charleston, South Carolina, are doing an amazing job with mobile, making sure that they are in front of, you know, the younger generations that would be going to the clubs and interested in those bands. And, you know, they give not only the information, but they also, you know, give some critical information and you know, and some curated information about the particular art and culture in that coverage. And I think that, you know, the alts across the board are really diving headfirst into mobile in a smart way, and you're going to see a lot of that come out in the listings and the arts and culture.
Where does
coverage.
The revenue come from in that model?
There's actually quite a few mobile advertisers that are, you know, that we're seeing, you know, pretty good money from. We're still, you know, frankly, experimenting to figure out where that comes from, but we are, you know, actively looking at some advertising and monetization and some sponsorship models.
Yeah, because I'm wondering how, given how much cheaper it is now to reach a more directly targeted reader, long term, I mean, and I hope this succeeds, and you said the word sponsorship, which I do believe is more the way to go, more branding, billboarding, being associated with good content. But I'm just wondering how you're going to compete with Google Ads and Facebook and this the way of reaching people for 100th or 1,000th of the cost of reaching a larger pool in the old model.
Well, the interesting thing is that...
That clearly is the challenge for us, right? I mean, it's not readership. You know, we've got, across my 8 papers, roughly 4 million people read them at least once a month, right? But half of those are reading digital versions. They're either reading on, you know, on the web or on mobile. And we get paid a lot less, you know, for advertising on those platforms. So, I mean, that's the real challenge of the business is, all right, so how do we create revenue, you know, enough revenue to support the content that we're creating on those platforms?
But you see, when I heard you speaking about Southcom, well, the reason I think you're going to be successful, if I may say so, not living there, is that because what I really think I heard you talking about was building community around value. You started talking about your events. When I sit with, there's a new organization sort of like AN, Association of News Weekly. Once a year, they bring those of us from different cities doing these nonprofit online dailies to Miami or some talk about our ideas. And they're all talking about events the way you are at Southcom and about how when you build a community of people who feel invested in the information you're giving, but also they're contributing back and they feel that's different and they identify with it. They bring them in public and a lot of them in the bigger markets especially are making quite a bit of money on events. So they're filling in where you lost that classified revenue, and you're actually creating something of value in doing that. Your event itself becomes content.
And I won't say we're making tons of money here, but we do an awful lot of events in public radio that we never used to do because face-to-face is a really great way to build community. I want to tell our listeners that we're talking about alternative weekly newspapers, the traditional model, you know, the old New Haven Advocate that you'd pick up outside the coffee shop. That's changing just a little bit, and we're talking with a few folks who are expert in this world. Paul Bass from the New Haven Independent, a longtime New Haven Advocate staffer. Chris Farrell, who's on the line from Southcom, Inc., and Tiffany Shackelford from the Association of Alternative News Media. We want to get to some phone calls now at 860-275-7266. We're getting a call from Mitchell Young calling from New Haven. Hi, Mitchell. Go ahead. You're on Where We Live.
How are you doing?
Doing
so,
well.
Hi, Paul.
Hi, Mitch.
First off, I hired the first person for the New Haven Advocate, also for the Hartford Advocate and what was then the Fairfield County Advocate. So I was a co-founder of those. I want to say Paul is, you know, completely wrong when it comes to the economic model. First of all, I mean, we're still in the print business. We sell print advertisers every day for thousands of dollars per ad. And they like it and they love it.
Mitch, tell people who you are. Tell them what you're putting out.
So we put out New Haven Magazine now and Business New Haven. They're different products. Some of it is the same audience that we had at The Advocate. But The Advocate didn't die a natural death. It was murdered by very poor management of the product. There's still a Valley Advocate in Western Massachusetts that's I wouldn't call thriving, but doing well. And so I think that all media is really driven by its ownership, the style of ownership. When they do a good job, when they're involved, they do well. I don't agree it's about zoning boards, Paul. You know, in 1986...
You never liked the zoning boards. We argued about that in the 80s.
No. In 1986, John, the Advocate sent out a survey to Congress people in Connecticut asking them if they would go for a law against the release of genetically modified, plants. That's what the role of the alternative press was to us. When we first started, one of the founders, Ed Mattis, he said to me, my job is to replace the Sunday newspaper. That was what his job was in 1973. That's how he saw it. He didn't see it as, having to be on the cutting edge particularly. In 1981, we called Jeremy Rifkin and we said what Paul's saying today, that the daily newspapers have stolen a lot of our stuff. They were now against nuclear power and things like that. And we had to come up with new things, and we were calling a futurist to help us. Jonathan Harry wrote A Civil Union was in that phone conversation. So I don't think it's
civic
action. Really, I don't think it's really about some of those same issues that you are hearing all the time about the media being dead. Do a good job, you sell ads. You might have headwinds because a lot of advertisers hear this kind of stuff and think what Paul said, all you got to do is go on Facebook. It's for Toads, a 50-year-old business, it might work. For a lot of old other people, it would be a road to complete, you know, bankruptcy.
Mitchell, just a second. I just want to turn to Paul Bass real quick. Is his calculation right? Do a good job, sell ads. It sounds to me an awful lot of newspapers, I don't know, not just weeklies, but dailies have been trying that for some time. And there's a lot of great newspapers out there still who are having a hell of a time selling ads.
I think it's mixed. I think Mitch is right that the single most important thing is to do it well. I think Mitch is right that greedy corporations killed these alt-weeklies because they stopped doing it well because they just did it on the cheap. I think Mitch is right that the newspaper puts out New Haven Business New Haven, New Haven Magazine are terrific things to read, and that's why they get ads. I am skeptical about the changing business model. I think that the guy at Toads is actually correct that for what he's doing, which is different from what Mitch is selling, he reaches the people who want to come to the show for 1/100th of the cost it used to require. There's no reason for him to do that. I think Mitch is right that long term, the better strategy is to think about what's needed and do it well. What he left out of the zoning boards is that when he was starting those papers, the zoning boards were covered. The Board of Ed was covered. Those are important raw material. Then smart people whom Mitch hired would then think about that material and take it to another level. I now think you have to combine both tasks because those weren't being covered because of the way that the mainstream dailies were destroyed and their staffs decimated.
Right, but Pat, Paul, I mean, like my, you know.
Well, hold on. I'll let Chris Farrell go ahead quickly.
Paul, my teenagers wouldn't be caught dead on Facebook, right? I mean, so, you know, the.
But they might be on Foursquare or some other kind of cool new site on their mobile phones.
The small business owner is going to be able to run their business and keep up with the latest marketing trends. Most of them can't. You know, and so what I've got my sales reps doing now is not just selling our products, but also other products. I mean, they're trained to be digital reps and sell SEO and sell digital ad networks and things like that. So they can really be marketing consultants to their clients. And so a significant portion of our revenue doesn't even actually flow through the paper, and yet it still supports.
Now, that's interesting that you said that, Chris, because what happened partly in the growth of Alt Weeklies was that Mitch and his crew actually were better at selling than the dailies, because the dailies sort of had a monopoly. They waited for orders to come in, and they figured out, especially with the small business owner, the better way to reach that smaller market. So it sounds like what you're trying to do there in Nashville is, again, think of the better new way to sell and hustle. Am I right?
It's Tiffany. Go ahead, jump in. Yeah.
Yeah, if I could add to what Chris is saying, you know, we're seeing this trend across our industry. Our papers are essentially becoming digital agencies of sorts. And I think that, you know, going directly to a tool like Facebook or Google Ads is okay for some if you already do have that kind of brand awareness, but you really can't. Most of these small business owners don't understand what to do in that realm, and they certainly don't have the understanding and the trust and the already existing community, and our papers do. And, you know, that's you know, what Chris is doing, and that's what we're seeing across the industry, you know. And, in fact, we've got Facebook and Google talking to us about, you know, working with us. So, obviously, they're seeing it, too, on some levels, that they want to, you know, again, really one of the things that we bring is that commitment to our community and those relationships. And I think you can't, you know, I think that those can't be overstated enough.
I want to thank Mitchell Young from New Haven, a longtime staffer at the New Haven Advocate and founder of that publication, for calling in. Mitchell, thank you so much for lending your voice to this. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
I also want to thank our guest, Chris Farrell, who's the CEO and founder of Southcom, Inc., the former publisher of Nashville Scene, an alt-weekly based in Nashville, Tennessee. Great to have your insight, Chris. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
As we head to break, we got a tweet from Neil who says, the Hartford News is a great example of free, locally focused newspaper spreading good news, culture, neighborhood reporting. We got a tweet from Edward who says, Alt Media has transformed into Twitter links and podcasts for me, finding content that I would never see and could be hyper-local. If you want to join our conversation, you can tweet us at Where We Live. You can call us 860-275-7266. As we continue our conversation about Alt Weeklies, we'll talk to Dan Perkins. Don't know who he is? You might know him as Tom Tomorrow, creator of This Modern World. It's a comic strip that's in a lot of alternative weekly newspapers. He'll join us next, Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up on Monday, on Martin Luther King Day, we'll talk to the editors of a new book about African-American history in our state. African-American Connecticut Explored is a compilation of essays that covers history from the colonial era to mid-20th century, from abolitionists to the Amistad, Civil War volunteers to Stamford native Jackie Robinson. You can join us this Martin Luther King Day for a special program on Where We Live. Today we're talking about a different kind of history, the history of the Alternative Weekly, a recent obit by Paul Bass, a longtime staffer at the New Haven Advocate. As that paper finally died a slow death, others are thriving. We're talking with Tiffany Shackelford, Executive Director of the Association of Alternative News Media, and we're taking your calls at 860-275-7266. I quickly want to get to John, who's calling us from the car. Hey, John, go ahead.
Hi, John. A great show. I wanted to, I guess, both agree and disagree with some of what your guests have said this morning. I really only have my own perspective as someone involved in kind of the music scene and the art scene for a couple decades in Connecticut. And to me, you know, publications like The Advocate and so forth they lost my trust a long time ago. It almost goes back to the mid-'80s or even older, when I really thought that The Advocate papers and other alternatives around here were really covering the true underground, and truly we're alternative. just as in music, you know, the whole word alternative almost means nothing anymore. It means something that's kind of safe, but only a little bit adventurous. And I think that that's something that, you know, the papers have kind of moved in that direction. One of your guests mentioned how, you know, their writers will pick out what's best. Well, the fact of the matter is they're also picking out what's best at their advertisers, at the clubs that are advertising with them. You know, I had firsthand knowledge of working for a retailer in the area who would always win one of the categories that they were eligible for, and it largely had to do with and was almost spoken by how much advertising money they spent on the back page of the Advocate.
And you're talking about these contests that are constantly run in glossy magazines now as well as alternative weeklies.
Right, right. And it's supposedly they're driven by readers, but the fact of the matter is they weren't. And I knew people who were kind of just picking and sorting out and who are we going to pick, and it was based on something else. So it's that kind of trust that I think people in the, kind of knew that over time.
Well, John, first of all, thank you. I really appreciate your point. And Tiffany Shackelford, if you heard what John said, maybe you can comment a little bit on that. He's saying he lost trust in some of the arts and culture coverage, saying it's not really the same alternative that he grew up with.
You know, I obviously can't speak to some of the very personal, you know, experience that he's had, but I would say that, you know, we do take editorial integrity very seriously. And, you know, I have to disagree. There is a wall between the editorial coverage of arts and culture and advertising. And, you know, those contests are reader driven. Now, they're voted for, you know, using, what used to be paper ballots, but in the times that he was talking about, and now online ballots. Now, that obviously can be manipulated in some ways because a particular club could, you know, market to its following or members. So, you know, that can happen. But, you know, for the most part, we really take our editorial coverage very seriously. Now, you know, there's also taste is in personal, you know, taste and scene is certainly part of that. And you can't always sort of get to what everyone agrees is alternative. I mean, he does bring up a sort of an interesting point about, you know, what is alternative. And I think that's certainly, you know, I'm a member of Generation X, and what I remember as being, you know, alternative when I was coming along is different now. And I think that's sometimes, you know, it's sometimes frustrating and different, you know, as we age, to be honest with you.
And I think, honestly, a lot of what he's talking about is the different appropriation of a word, not necessarily by alternative weeklies or anybody in the newspaper business, but just in culture. The whole idea of alternative is now a category on the record charts that has nothing really to do with being an alternative to anything. I want to turn to someone whose work has been an alternative to what you'd find in daily newspapers for some years. Dan Perkins, better known as Tom Tomorrow, is the creator of This Modern World, a weekly political cartoon that appears regularly in daily and alt-weekly newspapers across the country. Dan, welcome to our show. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you.
So, first of all, what do you think that you can do as a cartoonist in an alternative newspaper that you can't do in just a traditional daily?
I have a lot more freedom. I've always had a lot more freedom to break out of the traditional editorial cartoon with a picture and labels on it and a very simple point. I can get a lot wordier. I can, you know, the dailies are open to different things now, but when I started out, the all-weeklies were really the only place that someone doing something unusual, and what I was doing was unusual in those days, you know, could even find a space to run. And the all-weekly, I mean, I owe my entire career to the all-weekly industry. I would not be talking to you at this moment if it weren't for the all-weekly papers.
Well, and one of the things that we were talking about earlier in the journalism piece of our conversation, I think really applies to the work that you do in editorial cartooning, is these newspapers gave a chance to young reporters trying to find a voice, Dan, people trying something completely new. And that's what you're talking about here, is you got a way in to do something different because these papers existed.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's kind of changing now. I would like to make the point, though, that I've been listening to this whole hour about the diminishing fortunes of the alt weeklies, but especially locally owned mid-sized city papers, there are a lot of them out there. I mean, I get checks from them every week. They still pay most of my bills. I'm very happy to say there are a lot of them that are doing just fine.
Oh, and how do you think it's moving forward? I mean, where do you see this industry going, Dan?
You know, I have no idea. I focus on my cartoons each week where I hope this industry continues to thrive. I hope they continue to find. I think the key are the locally owned papers, or at least, like I run in, I think, many or most of the Southcom papers, and they still, even though they're a chain, they still seem to be keeping the focus on the locally owned aspect. Where you run into trouble is when a chain buys a bunch of papers and then imposes a cookie cutter stamp on them with no real understanding or relation to the local community. But the locally owned papers are still doing pretty well. Of course, here in New Haven, the Tribune kind of killed the Advocate, and that was just a shame to watch. I missed that paper, as I suspect Paul does.
A last thing for you, Dan, and I've read this in a number of places. Do you think that there's something to the idea that the alternative weekly newspaper just always thrived at a time when it could be an alternative to what we'll call mainstream culture, i.e. it was really big in the Reagan years and it had another little short heyday during the Bush years, but it's a little harder to have the type of edge when it's 8 years of an Obama administration? Is there anything to that? Because I've certainly heard people say it.
I think there's nothing to that. I think that it's just really more a function of the internet coming along and messing with the economics. There was always a place for these papers, and they were sort of ubiquitous in every city. And, you know, the problem now, certainly for cartoonists, my friend Jen Sorensen says that we all weekly cartoonists are like bamboo-eating pandas. We thrive in a very specific environment. And the problem for us has been figuring out how to survive online. There's an entire art form that grew up around the alt-weeklies. These alt-weekly comics, they didn't exist anywhere else. Myself, Matt Groening, Linda Berry, these things only grew up in response to the success of the alt-weeklies. And the problem we face is that as there are budget cuts and so forth, comics are an easy, visible thing to cut. The publisher can cut comics and show his investors or whatever, look, I'm making cuts, I'm saving money. But the thing is, you're saving like as much as you would save by cutting out coffee in the break room, except coffee in the break room doesn't have 40,000 followers on Twitter. The comics are always one of the most popular things. They're a destination, you know, a reason to pick up the paper each week, and cutting out the comics is just one of the most mind-bogglingly short-sighted things that a lot of papers have done, and I'm very grateful to the papers who realize that and haven't done it.
Well, your earlier metaphor gave me a great revenue-generating idea for you. Panda cams are very, very popular these days. Just put up a cartoonist cam.
That would be very boring.
We'll watch you work all day long. I'm sure it's very cute.
Here's the cartoonist pacing around his studio trying to think of an idea. Oh, there he is. Yes. Doing it some more.
Doing it some more and on deadline. Dan Perkins, better known as Tom Tomorrow, creator of This Modern World. Thank you so much, Dan. I appreciate it.
Sure, thank you.
Hey, and Paul, you're always good for this. I'm going to give you just the last 30 seconds here. What's the future? I think you're going to say it's the New Haven Independent.
Nope. I think the future is everywhere. I think it's the greatest time to be a journalist. There's more great reporting and thinking and citizen-powered dialogue going on than ever before in the media. I think it's wonderful what the Association of Alternative Newsweek is doing in the cities where they thrive. It's great what the new nonprofit media are doing, and it's great what the expanders in the mainstream old papers are doing to try to survive. I think it's a great era.
If you want to read a really beautiful obit of the New Haven Advocate, read Paul Bass's in his New Haven Independent. Always good to speak with you, Paul. Thanks so much for joining
us. Same here, John. Always a pleasure.
Tiffany Shackelford is Executive Director of the Association of Alternative News Media. Thank you so much, Tiffany, for your time this hour. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I enjoyed talking to you today.
Our program is produced by Tucker Ives and Lydia Brown. Thanks to our interns, Skylar Magnoli, Anna Novak, Tess Aronson, Jackie Lauper, Katie Pikus, and Jane Ashley. Katie Tolarski is the executive producer of Where We Live. We will be back on Martin Luther King Day with a special program. I'm John Dankosky, and this is Where We Live.